Larry Tye is the New York Times best-selling biographer of the book Satchel and Bobby Kennedy. His latest is a sweeping and spellbinding portrait of the longtime kings of jazz, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie, who, born within a few years of one another, overcame racist exclusion and violence to become the most popular entertainers on the planet. His new book is The Jazz Men, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. Larry Tye's other books include Superman, Demagogue, The Father of Spin, and Rising from the Rails. He also was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard University. He now runs the Boston-based Health Coverage Fellowship. The new book is The Jazz Men, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Larry Tye back to the roundtable. Larry, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe, it's great to be back with you.
Given the eclectic nature of what you write about, everything from Superman to these jazz men, what is it that brought you down this particular path?
It was a book that I wrote nearly 20 years ago on the black men who worked on the railroads called Pullman Porters. And these were guys who had the best job that a black man could get in America at that time. They were paid more. They got to see the whole country. And from the end of the Civil War until the 1960s, people wanted to be Pullman porters. And when I got done writing about them, they made me promise that someday I would write a book about their three favorite passengers who were named Ellington, Armstrong, and Basie. And the reason these guys were their favorite passengers, I think, said a lot about the Pullman porters, about the jazz men, and most importantly, about America. And that is because in that Jim Crow era of racial segregation, when guys like Ellington, Armstrong, and Basie traveled south, where there were laws separating everything from water fountains to schools to playgrounds into black and white sections, these three men, no matter that they were among the leading American entertainers recognized worldwide, when they went south, if they chose the wrong place to try to get a meal, the wrong hotel to try to check into, they could be berated, they could be beaten, and in a worst case, they could end up at the end of a lynching noose. So what they did was hired private Pullman sleeping cars to go south with them. And that meant if they were doing a concert in a place like Atlanta, at the end of the night, they knew they had a place where they could safely get a great meal, where they had a plush bed waiting for them made up by the Pullman porters, and most importantly, where they didn't have to worry about making the wrong choice by trying to get into a whites-only establishment. And in return, what they did is in the middle of the night, they would play private concerts just for the Pullman porters. And Joe, I don't know about you, but if I could go back to any moment in history, it wouldn't be bad to be in the closed capsule of a railroad car having the Duke Ellington Orchestra play just for me.
Absolutely. Just an amazing opportunity. What is it about these particular jazz men, these three men, that you wanted to focus on? And I assume it's both the similarities and the differences in their stories.
It is. So these three were born within 5 years of one another at the turn of the last century, and they stayed for an inconceivable 50 years at the very top of their profession. And I loved those common features, but I also loved the fact of how different they were. Louis Armstrong grew up in the Deep South in a neighborhood of New Orleans so tough that it was dubbed the battlefield. And I'm not sure that he would have survived at all if at age 13 he hadn't been plucked from the streets and tossed into a reform school. And he said later that he gave up those 18 months of freedom to learn how to play first the bugle, then the cornet, and then the trumpet. And he learned how to do that better than anybody else, and nobody could ever take it away from him. Duke Ellington was hundreds of miles north in Washington, and he grew up in a consummately middle-class household. But he had a sense at a very young age that he could do something special. when he was a kid and he would walk down the steep staircase in his home in Washington, he would tell his young nephews to bow to him. He would tell his young nieces at the bottom of the steps to curtsy, and he would tell everybody, applaud, applaud, because someday the world is going to know me as the great and the grand Duke Ellington. He had a sense he was destined for royalty. He was right, and he lived up to that aristocratic bearing. And our third figure, Count Basie, was totally different from those two. As outgoing as the others were, he was entirely private. They grew up in the South or the border South. He grew up in Red Bank, New Jersey. He wanted as early as he could to get the heck out of Red Bank. He found a way out, which was by playing a piano better than anybody else could. And he learned at the feet of the great Fats Waller and never looked back.
I am curious in the book that you talk about these three men. You tell their stories, but just given the subtitle of And Transformed America. But also, what does it reveal to us about the history of jazz? That what we know about that art form comes from this time and these three gentlemen.
So what we know is that jazz existed before them, but it never rocked the way it did with these three. Louis Armstrong proved through his trumpet that he could hit notes that nobody had ever dreamed of doing before. He showed the role of the soloist, the role of the improviser, and he basically showed that whether it was through his trumpet or through his raspy voice, he could entertain audiences worldwide. And by the 1940s into the 60s, it was said that the two most recognizable Americans around the world were Mickey Mouse and Louis Armstrong.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Duke Ellington left a legacy of 6,000 songs that he composed. He could compose, he could arrange, he could play an amazing piano, and he could lead an orchestra as good as the Duke Ellington Orchestra. And Count Basie taught America how to swing. They used to say that if you were listening to the Count Basie band and your toes weren't tapping, that you ought to go see a doctor because there had to be something anatomically wrong. So these guys didn't invent jazz, but they basically gave life to what was known as the jazz era in America, and they made this all-American music form do things that people weren't aware of and that set the table for everything jazz would become throughout the rest of their century and ours.
So to take it a step further, what did they say to white America about black artistry, as well as about equal rights?
I think that white men who would never have thought about letting a black cross the threshold of their home, these same white men were wooing their sweethearts with the music of the Ellington Orchestra and Louis Armstrong's gravelly voice. White women who would have walked to the other side of the street if a black man were approaching them in the privacy of their own living rooms, kicked off their high heels, and tapped their toes to the music of the Count Basie Orchestra. That for once, America let race fall aside and just listened totally entranced. And that made a point that was something that Martin Luther King said his movement either could never have happened, or if it happened, would have taken a whole lot longer if these three hadn't written the soundtrack for his civil rights movement.
When you think about these three men, you are very quick in the book to argue that while they are very important and they led amazing lives, they also weren't saints. And that we can say that, I think, about pretty much any person. But it's something that we also have to keep in mind when you look at these three gentlemen.
You do. And they were all men of faith. They prayed before every meal. They believed in God. They said they read the Bible. Duke Ellington said he read it cover to cover three times. But you give me a commandment, and I'll tell you ways they broke it. And just to take one commandment, the notion of fidelity to your spouse. Louis Armstrong had four wives, and even with the longest lasting of his marriages, his last marriage, he cheated on his wife, and she knew that he cheated. Count Basie was only married twice, but he cheated often enough that his wife left him at least twice. And Duke Ellington stayed married to the same woman for his entire life, but he only lived with her as her husband for a few years around the time they were having their one child. And he didn't get divorced because he had so many mistresses, all of whom wanted to be the next Mrs. Ellington, that he decided it was simplest to stay married and have an arrangement with his wife that she wouldn't ask anything of him other than what he was giving her in terms of alimony, and she became the excuse for why he didn't have to marry any of his mistresses.
Obviously, a lot going on there. Ultimately, what do you hope people take from the story of these jazzmen?
So, Joe, I don't have to tell your listeners why these were three brilliant musicians, but I hope people take away the idea that they had another half to their legacy. They didn't just accept the racial indignities that they had to bear. They pushed back in a way that I think helped make America ready for the idea that these black geniuses deserved equal rights, and maybe everybody with a dark skin did as well.
The name of the book, The Jazzmen, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. The book is by Larry Tye. It's published by Mariner. Larry, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is The Jazzmen. It's published by Mariner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.